You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, rocking and rolling here on a Tuesday morning. Sal Capaccio with you. I am live at Niagara Falls Country Club. Today is the media day for the Porter Cup. And the Porter Cup is an amazing event that's held every year here in Western New York, up here in Niagara Falls at Niagara Falls Country Club. And it is the top amateur, you know, event, arguably the top amateur event in the country when it comes to golf, which is pretty amazing. So it's a good day to come out here, and there'll be a press conference out here highlighting the players in this year's event. And then a bunch of us in the media get to go out and play the course. So, you know, we take advantage of that. But, man, it is cool to learn the history of it. We're going to have Marty Schimmel on in a little while when he gets a moment to kind of fill us in a little bit more. Brian Colzio is going to join me in the next hour. We'll talk with him as well. He's been up here covering this event for many years and playing up here. It's great. And, I mean, right now they put me in a room where I am overlooking Niagara on the lake, I believe. And then if you really, on a good day, and I think I'm trying to see if I can see it today. I think I can a little bit. You can see Toronto. I can actually see Toronto from this hillside where we're on. And when you come up the mountain road there off the 190 and you're getting up into Lewiston, you see Niagara Falls Country Club on your right-hand side. That's like a really high space. And then you overlook, like I said, Niagara on the lake. You see the river, and then you can see Toronto on a clear day. And I can see it right now. Actually, there it is. I see it. I was there yesterday. And I even see Rogers Center. You know what? And that's where my Yankees took one on the chin last week, for sure. Rogers Center. And now the Blue Jays are in first place. We're going to talk with Sal Marinaccio at 10:30, our weekly visit with Sal Marinaccio. Talk a little bit of Yankees, a little bit of baseball. It's that time of year. You got the All-Star game coming up. And, of course, the Porter Cup. So we'll get to that in just a moment. This is my, I think, last Extra Point show for a little while, because tomorrow is Italy Travel Day. So I will be heading out to Italy tomorrow. You know, hey, if you didn't jump on board, maybe, you know, next time there's something going on like that, you'll want to do it, and you should, because this is the trip that we've been publicizing here on WGR about 6 months ago. You kept hearing "Go to Italy" with Sal Capaccio, and then heard me do some, you know, reads for it and things like that, and all the different places we're going, starting out in Rome, Perugia, Florence, which I've never been to. I've been to Italy a few times, Tuscany, Umbria, Venice, and then an overnight stay in Lake Como. And that's going to be amazing. And we have lots of people listening right now who are joining us and going. Got to meet a bunch of those people last week at a little pre-trip event that we were in a conference room and at Odyssey, and said, hey, let's kind of talk about the itinerary, what you need, what you don't need, go around the table, and got to meet some fabulous people. And I'll be spending more time with these people, but we're all going to be going over there together. And then in each city, there's all different things that are set up, and we have time on our own. And there's times where there's a, hey, we're as a group, you know, they got us booked here to go to see something cool, like the Vatican, obviously. I've never been to the Vatican, so I get a chance to do that coming up this week. It's actually going to happen, I think, on Thursday this week. Also going to go to the Colosseum. That'll be great. And I've never been, like I said, to Florence, Lake Como. Heard it's amazing. But anyway, then when I get back, I'll have, it'll be about a week and a half. And then it'll be 2 days of me talking to you before training camp begins. And then Bill's training camp begins on Wednesday, July 23rd, over and up at St. John Fisher University in Rochester. And it is coming fast, folks. It is coming absolutely fast, training camp. So I'll be on here. So today's my last day for a while, going to Italy. And then you'll hear me for a couple of days before training camp. And then you'll hear me at training camp and joining the guys. And we're going to have coverage for you, of course, all training camp long. And it's going to be great here on WGR Sports Radio 550. So make sure you're dialed in for all of that. I know the guys this morning, Jeremy and Joe, were talking a little about the James Cook situation and what's that going to look like. Speaking of Toronto, I'm looking out and I'm watching Toronto now. I got a chance yesterday to play golf at Oakdale Country Club, which is where the Canadian Open has been held many times. Remember when Nick Taylor, I believe his name is, the Canadian who hit the 64, 67-foot putt a couple years ago? And as I've referenced here in the show before, Zach Hyman, who plays for the Edmonton Oilers, is actually from Toronto. He's a really big Bills fan. So over the years, I've just kind of run in the same circles with some people. I've gotten to know Zach and his family, and they've invited me up to play in his charity golf event. And went up again this year. That was yesterday. That's why I wasn't on yesterday. It was amazing. Went up to Oakdale and played there. Anyway, it was really cool. Elliot Friedman actually is there, and he runs a panel. You know, Elliot Friedman, who's, you know, the insider, TSN, and NHL Network, and, you know, he does a lot of different things. He's like kind of the Adam Schefter of the NHL. And Elliot actually was running a panel where they would bring people up on stage who are in the media who are part of this event. And there were several people from TSN who were there, and myself and a couple others. I got to play with Carlo Colaiacovo yesterday, former Sabre, and got to play with Jay McKee. Jay McKee, former Sabre, obviously, head coach now of the Brantford Bulldogs. The team, the Brantford Bulldogs, is owned by Zach Hyman and his family. And Jay McKee is their head coach right now. And Jay is obviously still dialed into Western New York, lives here in Western New York, has kids here in Western, live here in Western New York. So, you know, we had a good time talking. But what's really amazing is when you get to an event like this is how many people come up to me and say, hey, what about the Bills this year? What about the Bills this year? And there's just so many Bills fans who want to talk Bills football, who are ready for the season. And you get them, and you know, you can go anywhere. I'm going to be going to Italy this week, as I said, and I'm going to be seeing like people there. Oh my God, the Bills, they'll be asking about them. I mean, there's Bills backers places in Italy. I've been to one. I went to one in Milan. I've been communicating with a couple of the people who are at Bills backers in Italy now. Like, hey, where are you going to be? When are you going to be there? So you go up to Toronto and you're there with all these hockey players. Yes, Connor McDavid did show up yesterday. He was only there for a little while. And then, you know, he had to leave, but he was there for a little while. But a lot of people, they come up and, you know, they're there, they're in Toronto, they live there, and these hockey players. So Zach is a big Bills fan. And then Connor Brown, who I believe just signed with the New Jersey Devils, he told me he's a Bills fan. I had no idea. Like there's so many of these guys, but hey, that's what happens when you grow up in Southern Ontario. But I guess the point I'm making is how many people really are dialed in and want to know about the Bills and what's going on. And I know Jeremy and Joe were talking a little bit this morning about the James Cook situation. And really, that was the number one question that I kept getting. Hey, what's going to happen with Cook? Is he showing up? Folks, what I can tell you is if James Cook doesn't show up to training camp, he's going to be fined a lot of money. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, he, as he said, I like my money, which is why he came to mandatory minicamp. I don't think he wants that to happen. I think the question from my end from James Cook is when he gets to training camp, what does that look like? Meaning, you know, does he actually do everything? Does he participate in all the drills? Is it a hold in situation? I don't think it's a hold out, but you never know. Maybe we get there on July 23rd, the first practice, and there's no James Cook on the field. That could happen. We don't know. That's kind of the mystery of what's happening. It's kind of really the only big storyline, if you will, heading into Bills training camp, other than a couple position battles and, you know, what's going on with the team overall, big picture, and where they are right now in their timeline of things. But when we get to training camp, July 23rd, is James Cook going to be there? And I think he will be. But we'll see. Maybe he decides that's not what he wants to do. He wants to make a statement. And let's remember, that Hard Knocks is going to be there. So Hard Knocks is going to be there. And if James Cook wants to make a statement, this could go one of two ways, right? This could go the way of, okay, Hard Knocks is there and he's showing everybody what he wants and he's playing hardball with him and his agent. And, you know, it becomes a big storyline from the standpoint of, okay, yeah, he's really making a statement and go James Cook. And you're going to have people who think that way. You could also have the other way, which is people saying, wait a minute, like Hard Knocks is there. You're watching it from afar. And it's not a good look for him that he either, you know, whatever, doesn't show up. That wouldn't be a really big story. But what if he's a hold in? And he doesn't practice, then it becomes, you know, a much different story. I think it's I guess the way I would say it is, it's a much bigger story this year if that happens than pretty much any other year because Hard Knocks is there. That's the way I look at it. Because Hard Knocks is there, it is a story that becomes more national for people. And normally it would be basically, okay, because Hard Knocks, you know, isn't there, because the Bills aren't going to be, you know, Hard Knocks all the time, it's just more of a local story. Speaking of local, today we are here at the Porter Cup at Niagara Falls Country Club, and it's going to be a fantastic event. It runs starting 8 days from now, July 16th through 19th. And I am sitting here at a very nice room. It's a great space up here. And Marty Schimmel is going to be joining me here. And Marty's been a part of this executive committee for a long time. And I appreciate you joining me to tell us everybody a little bit more about the Porter Cup and what we expect this year. What is your official title these days over here?
The official title is Tournament Director, Sal.
All right, Tournament Director. So you are the guy who kind of knows all the ins and outs about this. So before we get to this year, can you just give a brief history about the Porter Cup and why it's here? This great amateur event that so many incredible amateurs have played in that are now professionals, that have won majors, some of the best golfers in the world. They've come right here to Niagara Falls Country Club. How did this all happen?
Well, this is our 66th event for the men and 12th for the women, but it happened back in 1959. Alex Porter was a local person, official in the area, decided to get it. Back at that time, it was mostly a local event. Ward Wetlaufer and John Konsek. Ward Wetlaufer won, I think, the second one. He represented the CCB, Country Club of Buffalo. And as we progressed, we started expanding, and getting out a little more regionally than nationally to build what get to where it came today, when we've had 68 major winners have appeared here at the Porter Cup, 92 or 93 PGA stars, PGA/Live. Have appeared here at the Porter Cup, and I believe 11 or 12 LPGA or Epsom Cup on the women's side have appeared here. So we've had a very, very rich history here at Niagara Falls Country Club.
And obviously, it's just kind of grown over the years, some of the names that have come through here. Give people a sense of some of these names that you've seen come through here over those years.
I think everybody knows Tiger was here, had his hole-in-one on number 12 back in 94. We've had Phil Mickelson was here. We've had Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, a literal who's who of the PGA Tour. Denny McCarthy, this is the 10-year anniversary of Denny McCarthy's win. He's doing pretty well on the PGA Tour. Billy Horschel was here three times. I want to mention, we can't mention Porter Cup history without talking about arguably one of the best amateur golfers ever, Jay Siegel. Jay Siegel won the Porter Cup three times. And you'll be at media today. We're going to have a nice feature on him in our program. He won the Porter Cup three times. He's considered, other than Bobby Jones, probably the best amateur golfer in history. And he played here several times. He won it three times. Only person to win it three times. So we're going to kind of honor him a little bit this year with in our program because this year is the 50th anniversary of his first Porter Cup win. So
how do you? So you say, here's a player that played three times. Eventually, these guys go on and they go on to the PGA Tour. So what qualifies you to be at this tournament, and then how do you kind of progress and say, okay, you're no longer a part of this tournament?
Well, it's an invitational. So a guy like Jay Siegel remained an amateur his whole career. So right toward the end of his, when he turned over 50, I believe he went on the senior tour a little bit. But he did quite well in the insurance business, I believe it was. So he was a lifetime amateur. He loved coming back here. But when we invite, there's several criteria. We certainly reach out to coaches. We keep an eye. This has become, Sal, a 12-month job. We're checking out tournaments. We're checking out college events and talking with college coaches. We look at world golf rankings, and you know what? We also look at the individual. I mean, if we like good kids to come here, you know. So there's a variety of things we do to judge who comes back and who doesn't.
Marty Schimmel, director of the Porter Cup, tournament director, joining me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you, and Niagara Falls Country Club is going to be absolutely beautiful today, hopefully beautiful next week. Looks like we have good weather on hand, and obviously people coming from all over the world, not just the country, to participate in this event.
We've got 9 countries represented this year.
Wow.
So that's kind of cool. We've got 9 countries. We've got 5 brother-sister combinations. Sister will be playing in the women's, brother will be playing in the men's. So that's kind of a unique aspect of our tournament. And Saturday, we're doing something for the first time. We're going to have a a open qualifier for members only, and we're going to take the top finisher, and he'll have the last spot in the tournament. So, which is kind of a cool thing,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. That's a pretty cool deal. You said it's a 12-month a year job. What I'm always impressed with, and every year you guys, you know, have us up here for the media to talk about it, and really blows my mind the community support that goes into this. It's not just the members here. It's not just the people here. It's Niagara Falls community. It's the people who live around here. You know, when the when Oak Hill hosted the PGA a couple of years ago, and you saw a lot of those players came in, they would live with people in their houses and their families. It's no different here. That's what everybody has to do, right?
We do the same thing. Special thanks to our members, our volunteers, our board of governors, our members who opened, some of which opened their homes. Dina and Jack Armstrong have been housing forever, and they usually take two or three. You know, whenever there's a late, you know, we kind of take advantage of it. It's always if we got to squeeze somebody in. Well, Dina will take them. But they've been housing for a long time, and you develop long term relationships with these guys, that as they go out on the tour and what have you. So there's a lot of nice stories about some of the players that housed here over the years.
And then, of course, even though it's worldwide, you always have some local connections here at the Porter Cup. Is this year no different?
This year's no different. We're going to have a local contingent on the ladies' side. We've got, locally for the ladies, we've got Rosalie D'Annunzio, formerly of Clarence, Indiana State University, Gwen Yarnell of East Aurora, Victoria Leach from Clarence, first time Natalie Wasik out of Lockport. She plays out of Park. She plays out of Lockport, but she practices at Park. She'll be here on the ladies' side, and on our men's side, we have our club champ, Rocco Randazzo, who will be participating. And we invited the winner and the runner-up of the Junior Masters, Tanner Latour, who's not local, but Jack Tebow, will be here. He finished second. And Billy Haynes is coming back, so we certainly look forward to having Billy here. He's just a great representative of our tournament. So.
And then not just local, but tell us a little bit more about this year's field, what you can fill us in on. People come out here and, you know, who they're going to see, what they're going to see.
Well, what they're going to see is they're going to see probably, arguably, one of the best local players ever to come out of Western New York, because Anthony DeLisanti has committed to playing this year. So you heard it first on Extra Point.
All right, there we go. I love it. Anthony DeLisanti, tell us a little bit about him.
Anthony is really an outstanding young man. Not only is he an outstanding golfer, he's an outstanding young man. He reached out a while ago. His schedule, early June. His schedule is a little different this year. He has withdrawn from another event, and he's playing to play in ours. And he's also playing in a Corn Ferry event the following week. So he's looking towards Q School and PGA tournament career. And it's going to be great to have him out here one last time. A lot of local people will get to see Anthony again coming out here.
All right, so people listening right now, they're like, hey, this is a cool event. I'm looking for something to do with me and my family. It's the middle of summer. Well, how do you take advantage of that? How do you come out here? Tickets? How does all that work?
Well, there's no admission, so that's nice. There's no admission, so come on out. We're going to be going out every tee times will be around 7:30 Wednesday through Friday, unless a change. We'll get a change out there. If we did get a change out there, we might go earlier one day in the event of weather or something, but the admission's free. It's a really nice way to spend the day. There's concessions out here. There's food, and get to walk the really nice golf course and see some really, really good amateur golfers.
Absolutely. Tell everybody where this is, where you're coming from. I was just giving the landscape view of overlooking Niagara on the lake, which is amazing. And I do see Toronto over there, which is incredible from this spot.
That's one of the nicest things here. This has got to be one of the best views in Western New York. You know, on a very clear day, you can actually tell if the Sky Dome is open or closed. So, we're right here, right on, right as you get off the thruway. You're about a half a mile away, and you'll make a left, and you'll see the golf course, and there'll be signs up directing people in. But we're here, we're excited, and looking forward to a big local contingent Wednesday through Saturday.
And then real quickly, online, portercup.com, right? Portercup.com is where they go?
Portercup.com for all tee times and information.
Marty Schimmel, thank you so much. Always appreciate your hospitality and graciousness to not only have us up here for the media, but to join me as well.
And go easy on those tee to green guys out here today on the golf course today.
We'll try. I'm playing with Brian. And I'm telling you, Brian is an incredible amateur golfer, right? I mean, I always tell the story. I've never played with Brian Kozio when he has shot over 80. He says, Sal, you're my good luck charm. I've definitely shot over 80. I'm like, you've never done it next to me. So he makes me feel so, you know, so bad. And I'm not a great golfer anyway, but playing with him, it is a little different. You watch some of these people when they hit the ball. I was up yesterday, like I said, playing in the Zach Hyman charity event. And some of these hockey players that you watch, these professional hockey players, and they just bomb the ball down there.
Well, speaking of hockey, we've got coming back is current NHL referee Garrett Rank is coming back. Garrett's a little older. He still kept a really good amateur ranking, and I think he wants to see how he can mix it up with some of these young kids. But he's currently NHL ref, and he's back after, I think, a two-year hiatus. Okay. So looking forward to welcoming him back as well.
Marty, thank you once again. Really appreciate it. You got it. That is Marty Schimmel. He is the director of the Porter Cup. And you can, again, go online. PorterCup.com is the place. You can find everything about the history, the men's, the women's, everything that's happening July 16th through 19th next week. Again, as Marty said, no admission. Come on up. You're going to see some of the fabulous golfers, some of the best amateur golfers in the world right here at the Porter Cup at Niagara Falls Country Club. I mean, some of the names that have been around. Check this out. Ricky Fowler, Wyndham Clark, Tiger Woods, as he said. Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson, Max Homa. I mean, come on. Think about some of these guys, Justin Thomas, who've all been over here. And some of the best amateur women in the world as well, right here at the Porter Cup. Hey, if you want to jump on board here, you want to talk about anything dealing with what's going on with training camp, with the Bills coming up, and of course, we still have the Bo Byram situation as well. 803-0550. I tell you, this morning, I got a... So I have my... I have my my alerts. Like when I get a text, whether it's from my wife or a friend or anybody out there, right? It's just it's the same alert that I get all the time. And but if I get an alert from the Bills or Sabres, like a PR alert, I have it set to a different sound. That way, if I'm in another room or something and my phone goes off and I'm like, wait a minute, that's a Bills or Sabres. Bam, I got to go over there and check it out. I got that this morning. I'm like, oh, there's a Bills or Sabres. Something's going on. And I'm thinking, did they trade Bo Byram? No, it's actually for a Alex Lyon conference call, which is fine. Alex Lyon is going to be talking to the media, a Zoom call today, later today. So, you know, that'll be happening later today. Alex Lyon, the goaltender that the Sabres had signed. And but I thought for a minute there when I heard that, I'm like, oh, my gosh, did something happen with Bo Byram? Was not the case. 803-0550. Maybe it is the case today. Who knows? It was July 5th of last year. When the Sabres traded for Ryan McLeod, Matthew Savoy for Ryan McLeod, it's been announced and it's been reported the Sabres are going to arbitration with Bo Byram, which basically makes he disqualifies him from getting an offer sheet from another team. What does that mean? Does it mean that the Sabres are just guarding against not getting an offer sheet because they want to trade him, because they can still trade him, but going to arbitration is what's going to happen there. All right. A little bit of baseball talk as well, because we always get with our buddy Sal Marano once a week here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. A couple of Sal's coming your way. And man, I know he is not feeling good about his Yankees. Neither am I. I am actually overlooking, and I can see, as Marty said, you could see when Skydome/Rogers Center is open or closed. I can't tell if it's open or closed right now, but I can see it over there. And that's where the first place Blue Jays reside. And they are just taking it to everybody they play, not just the Yankees. We're going to get with Sal Marano. We've got Brian Colzio coming up next hour. You never know who's going to drop in. A lot of media will be hanging out here today at the Porter Cup Media Day. So we'll be talking everything that's on your mind today at 803-0550. That's Getting Connected with Our Fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. In the meantime, Sal Marano from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle up next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
So up 3-1, a leadoff double here in the sixth, and here's Addison Barcher over two. And Barcher hits a fly ball to deep right field, and this one is gone. Their third home run of the game. Number 12 on the season for Addison Barcher. It is 5-1.
Yeah, if you've been following the Blue Jays at all, this is a pretty redundant sound, because they are just smashing the ball and mashing the ball. And it didn't really start with the Yankee series, but it really was a part of it. The Yankee series, they swept the Yankees. They take over first place. the Yanks are staring up at them right now. And right now, the Blue Jays are kind of the talk of baseball. They're in Chicago now. They're taking on the White Sox in a series there. They've won, what, 9 in a row? And joining me right now on the West Her Hotline to talk about the Yankees, the Blue Jays, and baseball as we do every week is my buddy Sal Majorana from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. And also, of course, the publisher and writer and all things Pinstripe People newsletter on the Yankees, which right now is kind of taking a blowtorch to what the Yankees are or aren't doing. Good morning, Sal. Good to talk with you. I wish it was under better circumstances for the Yanks.
Yeah, that was one horrible week for the Yankees. Great one for the Blue Jays. Horrible one for the Yankees. Could sort of see it coming early in that series, Sal, that you could just tell the Blue Jays have really got it together. They've been playing good baseball for really about a month now. And it's all because of their offense. Their pitching really isn't all that impressive, but they've just been outscoring teams because their offense has been on fire. And you can tell, I mean, the Yankees have been sputtering before last week began when they went to Toronto, and it was easy to predict that Toronto would win probably 3 of the 4. They ended up getting all 4, and they haven't lost since. They've 8 in a row now, as it is for Toronto?
I think it's 9 after last night, yeah.
Yeah, 9
it's
after
crazy.
Last night. So, yeah, and the Yankees salvaged one game last week, the finale against the Mets. So a nice, lovely 1-6 week. It's unbelievable that they dropped basically 7 games in the standings between Toronto jumping up and the Yankees falling down in 1 week. That's pretty amazing.
It is. Let's stay on the Blue Jays a little bit. I mean, boy, George Springer is a Yankee killer, is he not? Holy cow. Oh. I went to a game last year, he had a couple of home runs, and he just torched them in this series. But this is a good player, a good hitter, obviously, but it's not just him. We just heard Addison Barger hit the home run. Bo Bichette, they did it without him for a little while. And, of course, there's Vlad Guerrero, who's not having the best year, but he's starting to heat up a little bit.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing about that series. You know, Sal, was that Guerrero really didn't do anything to hurt the Yankees. I think he might have had one home run in the series. I'm not even sure, but he was not really a factor, which he usually is against the Yankees. He's another one who's killed them through the years. Bo Bichette missed the first 3 games. I think he pinch hit in the last game. I don't even think he started the last game. He just happened to come in as a pinch hitter. So it wasn't the guys that they usually have had trouble stopping. Those two, of course, right at the top of the list. It was Springer, who just had, you know, a series among all series. It was incredible to watch. And, you know, we go back with him a long way, Sal, because he was part of that Astros team that had the Yankees number for all those years. So there is some legitimate hate built up for George Springer through the years, and he just killed him. And he's been having a great year. You know, he hadn't really, I don't think, you know, they signed him a few years ago, and he's been an okay player for them the first 2 years, but this year he really has found it, and he was great. And then this Barger kid, I never even heard of him until last week, and all of a sudden he's hitting balls all over the field. So, yeah, it was an impressive performance by the Blue Jays.
No doubt about it. Sal Majorana joining me here on the West Her Hotline. And the Yankees, of course, then they go from Toronto to back to New York, but this time to take on the Mets at Citi Field. And, boy, that was a disastrous first couple of days before they finally, as you said, salvaged that last game. But, boy, going to New York to play a Mets team that had been struggling, and I guess the best fix is to play the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, Sal, that was a ridiculous series for the Yankees. The Mets had lost. They had gone through a 3-13. You know, everyone talked about the Pirates series last week. And then, you know, they did get it back on track. They beat Milwaukee twice in the middle of the week, so they were starting to turn it around. But that Yankees series, Sal, there was just no excuse for the Yankees not to win at least 2 of those games. The Mets were starting some kid named Justin Hageman on Friday. I think he's a rookie. Frankie Montas started Saturday. I mean, this guy is a complete stiff. And then they went with an opener on Sunday, and the Yankees win that game, but barely. They had to hang on at the end to win it. There was no excuse for the Yankees to be outpitched. They had Rodon and Fried pitching in that series. I mean, Stroman, I didn't know what to expect, and he actually was okay. But you can't lose a Carlos Rodon against Frankie Montas game. And Max Fried, as great as he's been this year, he wasn't exactly great Sunday. He only got through 5 innings. He had the lead when he left. And the bullpen, which has been horrible, somehow found a way to get 12 outs. But That was a bad series. I don't care that they won the last game. That was a series they needed to win at least two of the three games.
Sal Marana here. Pinstripe People is the Yankees newsletter. And, of course, Clark Schmidt. Boy, what are the? How do the Yankees recover from losing yet another pitcher who is obviously going to be gone for the rest of the year?
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, look, every team has injuries, especially to the pitcher. So I'm not going to – no one's going to give the Yankees, you know, any tissues here for that situation. But Clark Schmidt, it's really frustrating, Sal, because, as you know, he has just battled injuries his entire career. But when he's healthy, he's been really good. I mean, he has been especially the last couple years, he has been a really good, reliable pitcher for them. And he was off to a great start. He missed a little bit of time early. And then once he got back and into the groove this year, he's been pitching. I think he had a sub-3 ERA. Of course, he had the game a few weeks ago. He threw 7 no-hit innings. He's just been a really reliable, middle-of-the-rotation guy. And now he's gone. So they basically have Fried and Rodon and 3 huge question marks every time they're in those games. They're going to bring up this kid named Cam Schlittler from AAA, who has been impressive, and the Yankees think he's got a great future, and he's going to get his chance now. And they really need him to come through because Will Warren is in this rotation. Marcus Stroman is in their rotation. I mean, it's a problem. So they need Schlittler to come up and be the guy the Yankees believe he can be.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on around the rest of the league. And, of course, you have the Yankees and their situation. Now they're going to be taking on the Mariners and Cal Raleigh. Where's Cal Raleigh come from here? There's a guy that now I'm like, he's just mashing the baseball. He's leading the American League in home runs, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, he's been a very good player for several years, but this power surge – I think he's caught everybody's by surprise, especially from a catcher. I mean, you just don't see catchers hitting whatever he's got, 36, 37 so far. That's incredible before the All-Star break. So, yeah, he has been a great player for them. Now, the rest of their team, Sal, I mean, as usual, Seattle just kind of middles along, you know, and they've let the Astros take complete control of the AL West, which, of course, is not great news for Yankee fans either. The rest of their lineup is, I mean, they've got some good players. Crawford's a good shortstop, a really good leadoff hitter. Julio Rodriguez, everyone talks about this guy being a superstar. He has been anything but a superstar. I think he's one of the most overrated players in baseball, and he got an all-star berth when he really shouldn't have. So he hasn't really done too much for them. Where they've got it, Sal, is their pitching. I mean, they have a really good pitching staff. They just threw 3 straight shutouts over the weekend. Granted, it was the Pirates, but it was the same Pirates who scored 30 runs in 3 games against the Mets. So there was something to say there. Yankees are going to face 3 of their best pitchers in this series. So it's going to be a tough 3 days for this Yankees offense against Seattle.
Did I read right? Did Juan Soto not make the All-Star game?
Yeah. I mean, he did not make it so far. I mean, he'll probably get in. But he did not make the All-Star team. That was a little bit surprising. He's been good the last month. I mean, I think I read somewhere, Sal, in June, he had the second highest month OPS in Mets history. That's pretty amazing. I mean, and he kind of did it quietly, it felt like, because he started so poorly. But he really has been on a tear. Then against the Yankees, he hit the home run in the first game. Didn't really do much of anything else, though. So he didn't make the All-Star team. I think he'll probably find a way to get in there once, you know, there's going to be 10 guys that are probably going to drop out. So I think he'll be there eventually.
What do you make of the Nationals firing Dave Martinez and general manager Mike Rizzo?
Yeah, I mean, kind of overdue, right, Sal? I mean, since they won the World Series, they've been one of the worst teams. In fact, they've been the second worst team in baseball. I think they have the second most losses in the sport after they won the World Series. So there's been a lot of disappointment there. And, you know, we're kind of familiar with the Nationals here in Rochester because we're the AAA affiliate. And I see a lot of these guys come through Rochester on their way to Washington. And this is just not a great farm system, especially pitching. They've had a couple position guys that have gone up. Obviously, James Wood made the All-Star team, really good player. They've had a few guys come through here that are pretty good players. But their pitching, their development of pitching has been terrible for years. We're seeing it now. The only guys who pitch well for them are guys they get in trades, like Mackenzie Gore. So, yeah, I mean, it was probably long overdue. It was funny how Rizzo took the shot at the Lerner family on his way out. And I do know there's something to that. That's a very, very poor ownership group. They've really made it difficult for the manager and the general manager there. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised at it. I was surprised by the timing of it with the Major League Draft coming up here in a week. It was a little surprising, but, yeah, probably long overdue.
And then I know you follow the Cubs a little bit in the National League, and they're pretty hot, too. They've won 7 of their last 10, now playing .600 baseball. That looks like a team that might be poised to make a little run here in the second half.
Yeah, Cubs have been really nice, a nice surprise this year. Their offense is one of the best in baseball. They're killing the ball.
Yeah.
Seiya Suzuki's got 77 RBIs, actually. Kyle Tucker's great.
Sal, have you seen their differential, their run differential? Have you looked at their run differential? I'm looking at it right now. It's plus 126.
Yeah, 126. Yeah, they're playing. Their offense has just been great, Sal. They're pitching. You know, they're going to have some problems with their pitching. They lost Justin Steele, who's one of their best pitchers for the year. A couple other guys, Jameson Taillon's now on the IL. Mm-hmm. So they've got some holes that they're going to have to address at the deadline. And Jed Hoyer, who's their, you know, president of baseball ops, he has said that they are going to spend money, which has been a thing with the Cubs. The Cubs have been a little bit of a tight budget team for a big market team, and it's frustrated Cubs fans for a long time. But he claims that they recognize an opportunity here, and they're going to try to go out and get some guys. So I hope they do. I hope they do it after they play the Yankees this weekend, because that's going to be a tough series for the Yankees, one that I always dread, Sal, when the Yankees play the Cubs, because I do like the Cubs. They're my National League team, but you know the Yankees are still 1A. Yankees are 1A, and the Cubs are 1B for me.
All right, so I'm headed to Italy tomorrow. I'll be there for 10 days. You're gonna next week. I'll get Derek and Zach on with you. Have you been to Italy before, Sal?
I have not. Matter of fact, my niece is there right now on her honeymoon.
Ooh.
They went to Greece and they went to Italy. So my family has gone a couple times. I have not had the occasion to go. My wife keeps telling me that we have to at some point. So
yes, you do.
You know, I'm gonna have to find a way to do that here at some point. Once I retire, Sal.
Yeah, I think you should. Anyway, when I get back, it's only a couple days before training camp, and that's when we'll see each other again. July 23rd, the Bills open training camp right there at St. John Fisher University in Rochester. Sal, of course, will be covering Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. Is James Cook still the number one storyline for you headed to camp?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was lessened because he showed up for the mandatory minicamp. So I think that set the precedent. He's going to be there. I think he realizes, go out, have a great year, make them, you know, give you a contract extension. And if they don't, you go to free agency. So I think that'll be his mindset. That's the only mindset he could truly have, Sal. He doesn't have an option. So show up, play, and prove to them who you are. And then maybe it'll be good enough to get Brandon Bean to give him an extension. So it's a storyline, but if he hadn't showed up in June, then it would have been a bigger storyline. But that kind of got diffused a little bit when he came in.
I agree with you. I think that as far as positions are concerned, probably cornerback number two opposite Christian Benford feels like the only spot that's really kind of up in the air. How do you view it going into camp?
Yeah, I was telling somebody when minicamp wrapped, you know, Tre'Davious White was getting a lot of run, and I have a feeling, Sal, that they're gonna stick with comfortability early in the season, and Trey White, I think, will get every chance to win that job, and kind of keep the seat warm for Harrison. Now, if Harrison plays really good in camp and does well in the games, then he should be the starter. There's no doubt about it. But you know how McDermott operates. He trusts his veterans. He probably trusts no one, you know, more than Trey White, his initial draft pick. So it would be a surprise to me if Trey White's not the starter opening day, with the caveat that Max Harrison, you know, could get that job within, you know, the first half of the season if he plays well. That's kind of what I'm expecting to have happen.
Yeah, and on the offensive side, it feels like it's Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid. Kind of the, you know, what really is there other than James Cook's obvious contract situation? But, Sal, I mean, there's been nothing, no changes really in the offense. I know that Elijah Moore and Josh Palmer, and I guess that would be the only two changes. But other than that, this is just a kind of a machine that's just going to roll forward with. But it feels like those two guys, that's where everybody's focused on. You need more from at least one, if not both.
Absolutely. Those guys have a spotlight on them, more so Kincaid. I mean, Kincaid's his third year now. He needs to have a great year and, you know, get that fifth-year option exercise next spring. But that's a first-round pick, and they need to have him play like a first-round pick, and that was not the case last year. I understand he was injured, and I'll give him a pass for that. But this year he's coming in healthy, looks like he has a rejuvenated attitude. At least that's what it looked like in the spring sessions. He needs to be really good. He needs to be the guy they thought he was going to be. Keon Coleman, yeah, he needs to get open, Sal, right? That was the issue. He just did not have much success getting open against NFL defensive backs. So that has to improve. And you mentioned Palmer and Moore. I really like those two additions. I think, you know, everyone talks about that everybody eats mantra, and it gets a little bit tired sometimes. But, I mean, those two guys fit that to a T. They really do come in here with a couple of different skill sets. And I think as a whole, I like the Bills' wide receiver group. I think they got a lot of guys who do different things. And when you've got Josh Allen as the trigger man, he can really take advantage of a lot of those skill sets.
The Yankees newsletter is called Pinstripe People. It is absolutely free. You can find it on the top of Sal's Twitter feed /X feed at Sal Marana. Now is a great time to sign up for it. It's always a great read, whether the Yankees are playing poorly or doing really well. You got a lot of stuff in there. It's not just about current Yankees baseball, but past Yankees baseball as well. Sal Marana on the Wester Hotline. All right, buddy. Next time I see you, we'll be in Rochester. We'll have Derek and Zach get in touch with you next week, and hopefully better times for the Yankees as they head to the All-Star break.
All right. Hey, you have a good trip. Enjoy yourself over there in the motherland, and we'll see you at training camp.
You got it. Sal Marana right there on the Wester Hotline on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll be, take a timeout here. We'll come back very quickly, and then Brian Colzio is going to join me right around the top of the hour. We'll talk Sabres, of course, with Brian, but, of course, Porter Cup and what's happening out here at Niagara Falls Country Club. He's always out here year after year. Taking part of this event, Media Day, and everything goes into that. But we'll talk Bills, Sabres, and everything else on the docket next with Brian Colzio at 11 a.m. after this quick timeout, and then back here for a quick segment on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. All right, back here. We are at Niagara Falls Country Club, the Porter Cup. Comes your way next week. We're going to have Brian Colzio come your way here in just a couple of minutes. We're going to be talking about the Porter Cup, but also the Sabres. What's going to happen with Bo Byram? Brian's been on the Sabres broadcast for quite a while, obviously, and he's seen it all from some of the good to some of the poor. And right now, obviously, still 14 years. So we're going to get his thoughts on everything going on at the Sabres, the Porter Cup, and golf coming up next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR. Stick with me.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show at Niagara Falls Country Club. Porter Cup Media Day today. Going to head out and play some golf in a little while. But in the meantime, we have a media luncheon and press conference to tell us all about the fabulous players that are playing in the Porter Cup this year. I mean, the list of players that has played in this Porter Cup is just amazing. We went through some of them earlier. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, the famous hole-in-one where Tiger is there. I think there's a plaque there. Brian Colzio sitting next to me here at Niagara Falls Country Club. You've been up here many years watching this, and it's always awesome to see that plaque sitting there from the hole-in-one.
Yeah, we're going to try to go and make that hole-in-one today for ourselves, right? Why not, right?
I've never been. I've always said, I've known, not only have I never had one, I've never been in a group where someone hit one, so today would be a great day.
Yeah, I've seen one in person covering the PGA Championship, but I've never been in a group with one, and I've never had one either, so
Were you on the hole when the guy with a couple years ago at Oak Hill when it happened?
No, that was the Michael Block.
Yes, Michael Block.
With Rory. The tournament, I'll give you the quick story. 2005, the PGA Championship was in August. It was in New Jersey in Baltusrol. And I actually, it was the hottest week ever that I've ever been at covering these tournaments. It was like 110 real feel on the course or whatever. Anyway, you know, luckily us, the media access, I'm able to go into the media tent and cool down with the air conditioning, grab some waters or whatever. So I am going in and I'm like, I want to go watch John Daly play. This is 2005. So Daly's still part of the PGA Championship at this point. I'm going to go walk some holes with Daly. So I literally get two bottles of water, one in each pocket. I'm like, because it's so hot. And of course, I grab an ice cream because, you know, they have it in the media tent. You got to do it. I'm like, got to cool the body down, right, Sal? Take care of yourself. So I go out to watch Daly tee off on one. And as I'm walking down the first hole, because it's 110 whatever out, the ice, I'm making a mess of myself with this ice cream. It's like running down. I'm like, all right, I'm supposed to look together here. I'm like a media member here walking, covering this tournament here. So I'm like, well, there's a concession stand halfway down the first hole. So I'm like, I'll stop there. I'll get some napkins. I'll clean up here or whatever. Well, the fourth tee box happened to be right there. So I'm like, I'll watch this group tee off on four, and then I'll go catch up with Daly's group again. Charles Howell the third, who has, you know, a longtime journeyman on the PGA Tour, was the first to tee off, and he made a hole-in-one right on the spot right there. So I always say the fact that I actually was a little messy with the ice cream is what caused me to see that hole-in-one, because if I didn't have to stop and clean my hands off a little, I wouldn't have seen it. Yeah, he made the hole-in-one, like two skips, it went right in. It's the only one I've seen, but it was in the 05 PGA Championship, and the place went bonkers. It was awesome, and that's the only one. But hopefully maybe today in our group, well,
I know I've asked you this. Have you ever had one?
Never. I've never had one.
So. You've never played in a group that someone had one?
No. So
I know. And I here's the story. The only one I've really seen was kind of not really seen. So I said I've never really seen one. I was on a tee box with my buddies in Florida, and we were about to tee off, and then we heard a thump behind us at another green. And we heard someone yell, "Get in the hole." And we all turned, and it rolled in, and then this woman who had to be probably 65 years old walked up, and it was her who had hit it. And we're all going crazy. And then I looked at her and I said, you know what that means, right? You got to buy the drinks.
Yep, absolutely. What's great about hole-in-one stories is that you're right. You have it like that. It can be so random at any moment, and you don't have to necessarily be like a pro golfer to get a hole-in-one. All it takes is one great shot, and that's what we all love about golf, right? You have that one great shot per round that we always say brings you back to want to play again, and you know you can just have that moment where the stars align and the cups. I've definitely had moments where my ball has landed, like you can see like where the old cup was, like where, oh geez, if this was 2 days ago, it was in the hole kind of thing. But no, I've never had one. So maybe today's our lucky day.
It's funny you say that about coming back. So I'll tell you the personal story later. But the quick story is yesterday on the very last hole at Oakdale, I had one of the greatest shots I've ever had in my life. And it was our last hole. And I said, yep, Now I'm really excited to play tomorrow.
Because that's what happens.
Yeah. No, that's what's so great about golf is that it's the hardest sport in the sense, like, tell me what other sport can you be off by like a quarter of an inch with something and it have so much effect. Yeah. You know, I mean, this to take away from no other sport, but if I'm shooting a hockey puck and I'm off by a quarter of an inch, it can still go in. If Josh Allen's throwing to Keon Coleman and he's off by a half an inch, it still can be perfect. In basketball, it can still go in the net. In golf, that can be the difference between the fairway and out of bounds. Like, it's so difficult. And there is no opportunity for your teammate to help you out in golf either. If I'm passing to you in hockey and I'm a little off, well, you can adjust how you take the pass in so it can still be okay.
You shoot in basketball, it could be a rebounder. It says, all right, I'll get up there and tip it in if it rolls off the rim a little bit.
Right. So in golf, when you hit a bad shot, like there's nobody there to help you and you've got to react. And it's so mentally, to me, challenging. That's the part of it I just love so much, because you are constantly being mentally tested, because it's even decision making beyond the fact of the physical act of swinging, we know is so difficult, and such a little difference can make such a big impact. The fact that, like, mentally now, what kind of shot am I going to hit here? And it's very cliche to say, but I think it's always important. Like, the most important shot is your shot after a bad one. Like, what do you do then? And I think part of it is just, I've gained that perspective as I've gotten older, that like okay, take your medicine kind of mentality, but keep par in play or whatever your goal is. If your goal is to play bogey golf, keep bogey in play or whatever it is, trying to hit that hero shot. Sometimes there's the opportunity to do so, but sometimes being smart after you hit a poor shot is next. And I'll quote Roger Federer here. I was listening to a commencement speech from him from a few years ago. I thought it was amazing. I've shared it with my tennis players, but I think it works great for golf too. He said, you know, arguably the best, you know, Federer, the best player ever. He's won 81% of his matches in his professional career against the best in the world, but he's only won 54% of the points within. And he said, the professionals and the best in the world of their craft understand that they're going to lose, that they're going to lose points. And like, how do you then let that go? And how do you play on mentally? He said, like, that's what separates the elites from all the other greats. And I think you could probably use that mentality with any sport. You know, if you're a defensive back, you get beat. Well, how do you handle it the rest of the game? You're a quarterback, you throw an interception. How do you handle it the best of the game? You're a goalie, you let in a goal. You know you're going to let in a goal. Like, how do you handle that? And I thought that, you know, for Federer saying, he's like, look, I barely won more than half the points, 54% of my points in my career. He goes, letting go and understanding you're going to lose. How do the greats deal with how to lose? In golf, when you hit a bad shot, you're going to hit a bad shot. Like, how do you deal with it? I think, like, it's a great message, I think, for all of us, no matter what sport we're playing.
No doubt. Brian Kozo here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He's not on the Western Hotline. He's sitting right next to me because we are going to be covering the media portion of Porter Cup today. The tournament is next week. You've been coming out here for many years. I just had Marty on a little while ago and just talking about just how incredible this tournament is from a standpoint of the greatest amateurs really in the world that come right here on Niagara Falls is pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, you had it earlier. I mean, if you can put Tiger Woods on a resume of your tournament, then you know you got something special. And for Phil Mickelson to be here, who's probably in that next breath after Tiger, and Mickelson has won it, by the way, you know, so I mean, former number one David Duval from the 90s. So, you know, if you're a little older, our age, you know who David Duval is. He played in this event and won this tournament. So the current players, as we mentioned, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler, you know, there's quite a few even current names now here that are playing that have done such a good job. I think what's cool about it with the fact that you are now seeing amateur golfers be better at a younger age. So now you're starting to see college freshmen, college sophomores that are maybe have their chance to play in an event like this and win. And that gets them eligible for another big amateur tournament somewhere else, which ultimately leads them to maybe, you know, does that maybe allow them to transfer to a different school or a bigger school or this opportunity? And that's kind of how they are able to maybe start to align themselves for the pathway to what ultimately is probably their goal, which is a professional career. So, you know, you're going to see some players next week up here that are highly ranked on their golf schools, you know, whether it's some of the big power, like SEC schools. We know there's guys that come here from Florida all the time. I know Marty mentioned Billy Horschel has played here many times. Dudley Hart, Buffalo native, professional golfer, has had a great career. He's one of the Florida golf coaches. So he also kind of encourages his kids to come up and participate in this. So you're going to see John Daly's, we mentioned him. I just mentioned him with my story. John Daly's kid from Arkansas had been playing in this the last couple of years. Trevor Immelman, who has played in the International Junior Masters, by the way, East Aurora, played in the of real Masters and won it. Now, of course, the lead analyst on CBS golf coverage. His son was playing in this last year, and Trevor was actually here walking around one of the days. So you never know that next great star is going to be here. And, you know, right now, you may not recognize a lot of these names because they are playing at the amateur level. Most of them will be from the college ranks. There are just amateurs that maybe are just not professional golfers that are playing in this too. But the majority of these players are kind of in their college age time period here, and we may see them, you know, playing in the Corn Ferry Events Tour. I know he mentioned Anthony DeLisante from Sanborn. Great kid and, you know, got a really, really great college career at Valparaiso where he's been playing. We've been kind of following him a lot on Tee to Green. The best amateur Western New York player here in quite some time, Sal, that I think really has a chance to make it, you know, in terms of being a professional golfer. So I'm excited to see him compete this week. I would put him right up there with any of these players this week with a chance to maybe win this event.
We haven't really chatted since the U.S. Open ended. and Oakmont. What did you think about the finish and J.J. Spahn and his run?
Yeah, pretty wild. I mean, that's what's so great. Again, takes that one moment. Spahn, who was in contention for the first few days, kind of fell back. And then you had that rain delay, and we kind of maybe even forgot about him. Sam Burns was playing well. Hovland was at the top. Adam Scott was at the top. But Spahn, I loved his mentality. You know, kind of we just talked a little bit about mentality. He said it was the rain delay, the weather delay was like a reset for him. And he said he kind of was thinking about, you know, what people were telling, hey, Tiger Woods would still be grinding on this, and he still would not be giving up, and he would still think he has a chance to win. And he kind of took that mentality out there and then played very well and very steady. I mean, what a moment on that 18th green to have that long putt, that 60-foot plus putt go in for him, and him and his caddy celebrate, and the crowd goes wild. Like, I mean, that's a historical moment in U.S. Open history, but for him, it's a life and career-changing win for him, no doubt. And now Spahn's going to be in the Ryder Cup. He's going to be exempt for all the majors. I mean, so, like, you know, his life has now changed because of that week. But, yeah, pretty wild. We've had 2 years in a row now where the U.S. Open's been phenomenal. Last year, it was all about the star power. It was DeChambeau and McIlroy back and forth down the stretch, and, you know, DeChambeau hitting that incredible bunker shot on 18 to get up and down to beat McIlroy by one. And, you know, at the time, the huge storyline, Rory blows it again. Well, we know Rory went on to win the Masters, and been interesting since then. But for Spahn, even though maybe he's not necessarily what you put in the star power level, it was a great storyline there too. And there were probably moments, Sal, within the final hour of that U.S. Open that you could have argued six different guys winning. And, you know, obviously this was the storyline that we got, and it was a pretty incredible one.
No doubt about it. And, of course, we're going to have hopefully a couple more storylines coming up next week right here at the Porter Cup. The hole we were talking about, though, it was 14, Marty? Is that where Tiger had his hole? 12. You played the hole, right? Tell me a little bit about hole 12.
Well, it's a par 3, and, Marty, that's the one the creek kind of runs. Yeah, kind of like to the left of it. It's not necessarily like parallel to the tee box, but it kind of – it runs a little diagonally, and it comes more into play as you hit your shot a little bit deeper. But bunker on the other side, and yeah, when we go out there today, we'll try and see if we can replicate what Tiger did for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's what's so great. All these par threes, you got the chance of it going in. The par threes here at this course are great. For those that maybe if you come up next week and you walk the course, the par threes are all different. They're all unique. The one that you play early on, I think number 6, just it's super short. I mean, we're going to play it 7. I'm sorry, 7. We're going to play it today, and it is a really short one. Like, we're going to be hitting some sort of wedge probably into this green, but there are bunkers surrounding it everywhere. So, and the pin placement can be in a really, really difficult, challenging spot. And then there's one on the back nine, number 16, where I know you said you can see Toronto here. We might be able to see it from out there too, from some of the openings that they've cleared out. A really, really fun section. If you're going to come up next week and spectate, a great spot to go watch next week here at Niagara Falls Country Club, if you haven't been here, is the 15, 16, 17 area. A lot of good action. 15 is a short par 4 that guys might be going for to try to drive it in one, maybe have an opportunity as an eagle. And then 16 is a great par 3 visually that you can watch, and then you can watch them hit on 17 too. That's a really, really fun spot to watch if you come up here next week. And here's what's great too. I know Marty said free admission, which I think is amazing. Bring your son or daughter. Yeah. Going to a sporting event, we know, is nothing like it, Sal. You and I do it so much with our son, and we value that time so much. The fact here that you can get right up next to them, I mean, you can get as close. You can hear, you'll hear them breathe and grunt when they swing the golf club. I remember bringing my son up here when he was young, and one of the players tossed him a ball, and he was holds it like it was the greatest thing ever. So the fact that you don't have to, you know, going to like a major like the PGA Championship at Oak Hill is amazing, but it's hard to bring a little kid. If you have a little kid and you want to, and they're into golf, or you want to get them excited about golf, bringing them up here is great because they can be right up front. They can be within 5 feet of the player hitting. So that's what's really cool. And now that they've added the women's division too, if you have a daughter, like, have them come up here. The players are always so good with interacting with the kids from what I've seen. So the fact that it's free, obviously a short drive from everybody here in Western New York, like, I would definitely encourage it.
Brian Colzio, also the Buffalo Sabres pregame and postgame host. Obviously the Sabres have made a significant move in the offseason. They've traded J.J. Paterka. We're awaiting a secondary move, but we don't know if that's going to happen with Bo Byram. But now they've reportedly they're going to go to arbitration with Bo Byram, which means he can't have an offer sheet given to him by another club, but it doesn't mean the Sabres can't trade him. Are you anticipating him being traded?
I mean, we've had so many like mixed signals with Byram. Like, well, they're going to look to trade him. Well, they don't want to sign him long term. Now, of course, the fact that maybe the offer sheet piece is off the table. It's interesting that it was a team decision, because Adams spent a lot of his press conference talking about like the salary cap and the space that they're leaving was for Byram. Well, in case of an offer sheet. Well, then he's saying they're going to match it. Well, if ultimately you were going to match an offer sheet, like why wouldn't you want to have gotten things done before it even got to that point where you were going to be forced to make that decision? I mean, we look back at how the Drury-Briere situation went down. Had the Sabres handled those two contracts differently, maybe Thomas Vanek's decision goes down differently. But Darcy Regier at the time, and I think probably the right thing so, is that you had to match it, because you're like, well, we can't lose Drury and Briere and now Vanek, even though it was going to be a boatload of picks, you know, coming back from Edmonton. So right now, I think you look and say, well, if we got an offer sheet, we would have had to have matched it. Probably so, because you don't want to lose them. Right now, Kevin Adams, I think, should not be dealing with any more move or any trade or any transaction that involves futures, as they say, you know, draft picks, prospects.
I agree.
Yeah, because he may not be here to see any of those.
To me, and I know people made the point on social media with me when I said this, that, well, it's not the same pipeline they've had. It's not as good. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm not interested in another first or second round pick that we have to wait 3 years to see, just to even have a chance for that person to develop. Like, you got to get NHL players at some point.
I agree. And here's what we've seen with the Sabres recently. If you look at the last handful of major trades that has involved what we would label as an upper tier player, it's always been the Sabres trading that upper tier. But like, the best player in the trade has left Buffalo. You look at the Eichel trade. Now, Alex Tuch's been really good, and I hope that the Sabres work something out. I think he's excellent to have in this organization. But it's not an insult to Alex Tuch. Jack Eichel is still the best player in that trade. Sam Reinhart, the Sabres got picks and draft picks and might end up with a star goalie in Devon Levi as a part of that trade. But the best player in that trade left Buffalo in Sam Reinhart. At the time, you go years ago, Ryan O'Reilly. At the time, he was the best player in that trade. Now, that trade, you could argue, worked out because it turned into Tage Thompson, who obviously now has turned himself into an elite scorer in the NHL. But at the time, the best player in that trade was leaving Buffalo. Even just recently, J.J. Paterka, the best player in that trade. I think Kesselring is going to be very good for this team and a very hopeful good partner for Owen Power. But in the moment, right now, on paper, the best player in that trade is leaving Buffalo. And where is that return coming back? The Sabres do maybe have prospects. They maybe do have extra draft picks that they can deal with. They might even have some depth with, you know, players in Rochester or in the collegiate ranks that they own the ownership to their draft status already that they could move. But where's the reverse trade? And that's the one that I feel like Kevin Adams, and I thought, you know, if we hear all these NHL insiders have been saying the Sabres are open to making a big move. The big move that I'm looking for is not the best player in the trade leaving Buffalo. I'm like, where's the best player in the trade coming to Buffalo? And I understand no trade clauses and all these sort of things that Kevin Adams has brought up, I think are fair to bring up, but fans are tired of hearing excuses. They just want to see something done at this point. Like, where is that trade where the best player in the trade actually comes back to Buffalo? And that's the one that I feel like we're still sitting here waiting for. If Bo Byram gets traded, is he going to be the best player in that trade? And there's, you know, a thought that maybe we can just add that to the list, unfortunately. You'd hope maybe. Now, can Byram plus number one draft pick plus prospect maybe land you a great player elsewhere? That's ultimately what would be a trade that I feel like I'd be on board with.
Yeah, but you go back to, again, these guys, if you want that type of player, they might have a no-movement clause, might have a no-trade clause. I saw the other day that people talked about Rossi, right, in Minnesota, and apparently his no-trade clause kicked in on July 1st this year. So if you're going to trade for him, it had to be before July 1st, because otherwise, why would he say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll just go to Buffalo.
Right, and you have this, where we've heard it before with other moves that Adams has said potentially has been made, and the player squashes it by saying he's not going to come here. And here again is the chicken or the egg argument. Like, well, if you can't get players to play here, how are you going to get them to be better? Adams is dealing from maybe a position of weakness, but unfortunately, he's been a part of the reason that this team hasn't been able to get it done. I mean, everybody, whether it's Adams, the coaches that have been here through his tenure, to miss the playoffs 5 years in a row in the NHL and get a sixth season, if I'm Adams, I'm feeling extremely fortunate. And, you know, everybody's rooting for him to be successful. They want this team to snap the streak. But I'm surprised that he hasn't still been more aggressive in trying to do things. Even something like a signing, I was mentioning this with Joe yesterday, Nikolaj Ehlers signs with Carolina. Now, maybe again, Ehlers would have wanted absolutely nothing to do with the Sabres. But a player that's maybe second tier, not Mitch Marner level, maybe second tier, like Ehlers, he signed for $8 million there. Well, maybe you're going to have to give 9.5 or 10, and they have the space to do it. And then Adams has said, well, we have to keep this space just in case of the offer sheet for Byron. See, and that to me seems like reactive. Like, you've got to go ahead and make a statement that you can get a player here. And I think fans would understand if we looked at a contract and Ehlers maybe got 9.5 or 10 million. We'd be like, ooh, that's kind of high for him. But I think that's what the Sabres have to do right now. They're in a spot where I think they're going to have to overpay to maybe get a big name or give up something that maybe even the trade, you might say, maybe that doesn't favor the Sabres. But if it gets a bigger name here that ultimately maybe can push you over the top, I think you have to do it. And because I feel like Adams is running his timetable for him being the GM, to me, I feel like it's ticking and it could be done at any moment. I think I'm surprised that he hasn't been more aggressive. And he might immediately respond to me and saying, I've been trying. I just can't get those no movement clauses. I can't get this other team to agree to him. At some point, though, I feel like you have to pull the trigger. Because ultimately, you look on paper at their roster, tell me how they're different. They lost a top six forward who's capable of scoring 30 goals. They've added a defenseman that I feel like will be good, maybe on their second pair with Owen Power. But are they actually better than they were a year ago? If I look up and down the roster, they said they're harder to play against. And he said, well, that's going to be ultimately the difference that maybe pushes them in. I mean, they missed the playoffs by 12 points. Like, is being harder to play against with your second pair D, one of them, and maybe your third and fourth liner being a little bit more tougher to play against? Is Jack Quinn all of a sudden going to score 30 this year? Like, he's banking on a lot of things that ultimately you're hoping is Yuri Kulik going to take another step? I mean, these are all the things that I feel like is fair to criticize Adams for when they missed the playoffs by one, when they had 91 points and Florida had 92, and he was kind of saying, well, they all had great years, they're just going to take the next step kind of thing, and then that'll be enough. And ultimately, we've shown that for many of them, they took a step backwards. So
it's so funny you bring up the 12 points, and I go right to all they had to do, Brian, was get 45% of that losing streak, the points, right? Like the 13-game winless streak.
26 I mean, points up for grabs.
Yeah, if you would have gotten 13 points, half the points, you're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they look at and go, that's how close we are. Well, we don't look at it that way, but I wouldn't doubt if they're in their own offices going, look, there's 13 games here. That's how close we are. We may not be close on the 12-point gap, but really, it was 13 games where if we just get half those points, we're in the playoffs.
Right, and that streak didn't ultimately start with that Colorado game. I think it was the third game in or the fourth game in, but that game, remember, they were up 4-0 after.
Oh, I remember. It was Max's birthday party. We were there in the arena, and they were having a great time. The kids were, it's 4-0, let's go, baby, and then everything fell apart.
Yeah. And that obviously really mentally crushed them for a while. They could not recover from that. Because the three previous losses before that were what you'd call, quote, good losses. Like, it was an overtime loss. They were, I think the first one was a 1-0 loss to Minnesota where you had a great performance from Lukanen and they didn't ultimately score. So it wasn't like it was trending that way into the Colorado game, but boy, that game crushed them. And then for the next 2 weeks, it was like they were just lost. It took them too long to recover, and ultimately that was different. And you mentioned getting some of those points. Just had you gone 4-9 even in that stretch, well, maybe at trade deadline time now, you're in a different spot. And now maybe the trades that they make or the moves they had to make are different. And maybe that affects them in terms of the moves they make now. Or maybe that one or two moves. And you know what, Kevin Adams thinking, I am going to be a little bit more aggressive now and swing for the fences here on a trade at the trade deadline. Whereas at the trade deadline, it was more about, again, building for the future because we knew they were so far out of it at that point.
I just have a
goaltending question for you. Can you stick around for a minute? Yeah. Are you okay? You going to stick for the break? Okay, Brian Kozio, I want to ask you about Levi and UPL and how they should play this going forward. Brian Kozio is with me here, Sal Capaccio at Niagara Falls Country Club. It is Porter Cup Media Day today. We're having a great time not only talking about the Porter Cup, of course, the Buffalo Sabres. And, of course, since Brian's sticking around, I'll ask him a little bit about Bills training camp, what he's looking forward to coming up as it starts on July 23rd. We'll take a timeout right now here on the at Niagara Falls Country Club on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, Sal Capaccio with you, Brian Kozio joining me as well. All right, Brian, you were kind enough to stick around through the break because I said I wanted to ask you about goaltending. You've seen a lot of it. You've seen a lot of these guys, how they've been handled or not handled over the years. And you saw some inconsistency last year from Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who was showing some promise the year before that, but it just didn't really sustain last year. Now the Sabres have, as you referenced, maybe a guy in Devon Levi who could wind up being a really, really fine, excellent NHL goaltender, but they don't feel he's quite ready there. We know he's a little bit younger. How do you see, how would you play maybe the goaltending situation playing out on the heels of the Sabres also signing Alex Lyon, who, by the way, will be doing a media Zoom call today at 3 p.m.
So I will say I thought that the plan after last year of Levi spending the entire season essentially in Rochester and him having a very good playoffs up until even the last round against Laval, but the whole team had a tough round there against Laval. I thought that he was going to be up and it was going to be an open competition between him and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Ultimately, because I feel like Levi has the higher ceiling, that you kind of root for him to win the job in the sense that you feel like there could be more potential there to have better greatness and better goaltending play. The Alex Lyon signing on its own, him individually, I like. When you put now all three together, it's an equation that I'm still trying to figure out. If I'm Devon Levi and I see that signing, I'm like, well, what the hell? Like, I did everything you asked. I went down to Rochester. I spent the entire season there. I carried my team at various points throughout the regular season and in the playoffs. And I had statistically, they were, of course, comparing him to Ryan Miller-like numbers, the best AHL goalie numbers since Ryan Miller. Okay, so what else?
The best college goalie numbers ever, basically.
Right. So what else do you need me to show at the AHL level? You know, this is from the Devon Levi perspective, to the point where I think he deserves a chance to see if he can be the number one goalie with the Sabres this year. And I thought that was going to be a very, very interesting storyline going into this year's Sabres training camp and preseason. Can Levi rise up and be the guy? Luukkonen last year, very, very just, to me, okay. I wouldn't say that there was anything there that was glaring that he was bad with, but there definitely was some inconsistencies. He had some of these moments where he looked back like the Luukkonen we saw when he first took over as the starter, where he was out of position or maybe overcommitting to shots. Not that in-control Luukkonen that we saw really, really good for a few months at the end of two seasons ago when he kind of was putting up Vezina-like numbers. So I think we've seen three really, really high-level months out of Luukkonen, and then the rest to me has been just okay. If you said Lukanen's the starting goalie for the Sabres here for the bulk of the games, I don't think it's bad. I think Alex Lyon could provide a really, really nice backup for him, but I'm still kind of trying to see, like, where does Levi fit in all this? And if it means starting in Rochester again, like, are you now again maybe hampering a player in terms of maybe him helping out the NHL team? Now, for his personal development, would him playing in Rochester another year be bad? I don't think so at all. Goalies, as we know, take a little bit longer in terms of their development. But I'm just surprised in the sense that, all again, these moves that Kevin Adams supposedly was going to be made. Could there have been an opportunity to trade one of the goalies, whether it's Luukkonen or Levi? I think there would have been. If Luukkonen can be a part of a trade offer, whether that him and Byram together that can land you somebody, I'd be all open for it. If Levi and Lyon were your two goalies this year, I think I'd be okay with that. I think Alex Lyon has proved enough that if you need him to maybe take a bulk of it while Levi is going through the growth of getting more into the NHL, I think that would be okay. But to me, the signing of Lyon, puzzling, and if I'm Devon Levi, I'm not happy about it.
It is a really interesting kind of quandary because, yes, if you're Devon Levi, you want to be on an NHL club, of course. The Sabres, though, have to look at it as if he's not playing up here, what is he? What is the benefit? We need him to play. Yeah, he might be able to help us every fifth game. Let's just say something like that. Whatever, how many games he's going to play? But he's also playing all on the regular down in Rochester. That's what we need. That's why it's such an interesting concept. All right, quickly on the Bills because training camp does open July 23rd. What are you looking forward to on the field, watching? Any particular position battle? Any development of any player through training camp to try and get a handle on?
So I think I know this might be a repeat answer from last year when you asked me this, but I think I'm very intrigued by receivers because we have another new collection of guys that have been brought in. Josh Palmer is a guy that I thought was kind of a signing that, like if he can stay healthy, he had some really, really good moments with the Chargers and when he was with Justin Herbert, but he was another player that was inconsistent. I'd like to see maybe, you know, Josh Allen makes everybody look great. So can he come in and maybe have a bigger impact than maybe a lot of people are thinking? What is Coleman going to look like coming off of, obviously, what was trending to be a good first year and then the injury and then coming back and like, I want to know what's his year two going to look like. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what this whole, the depth looks like with the receiver position. Obviously, there's been some other signings there too, but ultimately, how many do they, was it normally, is it six that they normally keep, Sal? Is that the number that you
five receivers generally, it might be a sixth if they can, if it's really because of a certain specific special teams role they want them for.
Right, and that obviously was maybe a piece of what Mac Hollins was last year. Now we know he's gone. So do you have another receiver that can maybe fulfill a role that's vital on special teams that it is worth keeping a sixth if you're going to? So I think that position for me, I'm going to be looking at quite a bit. Obviously, the running back thing has gotten a lot of talk lately with James Cook. I wonder with the cap going up, can you project possibly something to give Cook his money that looks maybe impressive, but ultimately has less of an impact on the cap that we ultimately think maybe.
You mean one of those deals where the agent puts the number out because it sounds really good and it looks really good when you look at it, but he's not really getting all that money.
Right. Percentage-wise, I mean, what ultimately, again, let's just use math here. How much do you want the running back position to take up?
That's right.
Right. And as the cap goes up, that to me, because we're, you know, to see a running back make double-digit million, like if it's 10, you're going to be like, whoa. And maybe, you know, that's a lot. And Brandon Bean really hasn't paid a running back in his tenure as general manager big money. So it would go against the trend of him doing that. And it seems as though they have this cycle of, okay, then we're going to draft a rookie, Ray Davis. He seems to be ready. You know, could he ultimately, could you envision Ray Davis turning into be the number one running back next year? I could, for sure. And I think he can handle it. But then that means maybe next year they would draft another running back in round two or three, and the cycle continues over and over. And if that's what Brandon Bean ultimately thinks is great for the Bills, and that, look, salary structure-wise, we need it, we value it at other positions, then I think that's fine. I just think Cook is such a likable player. I think he's so versatile. I think the fact that he's been able to do so many good things out of the backfield, too, receiving-wise, where he can be a weapon, I still think he's even underutilized in that area. I'd like to see him even used more as a receiving back. It's tough to let a guy go that you know has produced so well. And statistically, it's hard also too sometimes to separate fantasy football numbers from, he scored a lot of touchdowns last year, but he could have even had more because, you know, Allen takes some of those away too down on the goal line. So like, what value do you put on statistics in today's NFL with running backs? And because he's not on the field every play like it was back in the day, or some of these other running backs that still do play every down or mostly every down like Barkley, like, do you really want to commit that much? Ultimately, in the end, you know, my rooting interest for watching James Cook and wanting him to do well, and I think he's a likable, rootable player for, in the end, if Brandon Bean said, look, I'm going to do the same thing again. We're going to move on from James Cook and Ray Davis. We're going to elevate, and we're going to draft another guy in the second or third round. We're going to do it again and again and again because we value the money elsewhere. Well, it'd be hard to argue against that plan because there's never a matchup or there's never a game where ultimately I say, man, I wish we had more out of the running backs today.
Yeah.
Like that to me at the end of the day is, are you winning or losing football games because you feel like you didn't get enough out of the running back position? We've debated forever about receiver with this. We've debated forever about the pass rushers with this, like edge players. We've debated about the secondary with their depth and injuries that get involved. How often have we really sat here and had conversations on our station or with callers or with people on social media saying, hey, we didn't get enough out of the running backs today? And in the end, I have to take the right side of my brain, the emotions out of it, that really likes James Cook and would love to see him here long term and say, I don't ever remember talking ever with anybody after the game about, we didn't get enough out of the running backs today.
Yeah, and look, they have their entire offensive line coming back, a good offensive line. Not only the starters, every one of their backups is coming back. I mean, this is a group that guys they have, I think, can perform pretty well. And even if it's Ray Davis, Ty Johnson, I think that can happen. All right, who are the two starting cornerbacks week one against the Baltimore Ravens?
Well, Benford for sure.
Of course.
The other one... McDermott's track record would say Trey White. I love Trey White, one of my favorite Bills ever to watch. He's lost a step. Now, could he come in and maybe make us up close in person, make him look a little bit better? Sure. You watch him on with his other teams, and it looks like he shouldn't be the starter. And it doesn't mean that he shouldn't be on the team and that he's not valuable to the team. There are many facets and reasons why he would be an amazing, cornerback three on this team. You spent the first-round draft pick on Hairston. The last time the Bills spent money on a first-round draft pick on a quarter didn't work out so well, we know. But knowing what I know about McDermott and how he handles things, if you said I have to, put money on it, it's White.
I agree. I think Tre'Davious White as well. But with a lot of space maybe for Max Hairston to eventually become that guy. We'll see. That'll be one of the training camp battles. All right, I'm expecting 72 today. You and I are playing together. Should be fun. I'm just kidding. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it, especially sticking around for a little while. In fact, we hope you stick around through this break, because when we come back, we're going to wrap up your Tuesday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, live from Niagara Falls Country Club. Want to thank Marty Schimmel and the tremendous crew out here, Alan as well, for the... I don't want to get Alan's last name wrong.
Alan Cohen.
Alan Cohen. Thank you very much. Tremendous crew out here at Niagara Falls Country Club for having me out today and this show out today, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It's always a great day to come out here, and love coming out here to play, but really learn about... It's really awesome to learn about some of the incredible golfers, and that's next week. Go to PorterCup.com for more information. Brian actually left the room for a minute and said, wait a minute, Sal, got to remind everybody about the Duster Challenge. I said, you're right. That is such a fantastic night. Unfortunately, it's right the night I'm getting back from Italy. I can't be a part of it this year, but I will tell you, I participated in this, and it's a great, great time.
Thanks, Sal. Just for anybody that wants to participate, every year our Tee to Green guys and the Western PGA, we team up and we do what's called the Duster Putting Challenge. We set up an 18-hole putting course at Glen Oak on their huge practice facility area. And we've had over 100 golfers, sell the last 2 years do it. Everybody comes and putts. You either putt at 6 o'clock or at 7 o'clock, and then you get dinner in between. Peter Gourmet is going to provide the dinner again this year, so we're really pumped about that. Thank you, Peter Gourmet. And then we narrow it down to the top 16, and we do a little mini 9-hole match play putt-offs for 9 holes, 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, and so on. And we've got prizes, raffles, 50-50 the whole time. Your $49 donation get you into the contest. It gets you the dinner for free. It gets you all the drinks for free. Callaway's going to be there. You're going to get a sleeve of balls from Callaway. We turn on the lights when we start to get toward the end. We got music. And the whole reason we're doing it is to raise money for PGA Hope. And real quick on PGA Hope, it gives military veterans a golf experience to help them transition back to normal citizen life. And I know, you talked to a lot of veterans. It's really tough sometimes coming back from being out at war, serving our country, and then coming back and trying to live a normal life. So this money helps put them in golf scenarios where they can take a group lesson or a golf experience, or even sometimes equipment if they've been disabled through something in the war that can help them still enjoy the game. So that's why we're raising money. I'd love to have you sign up if you've never done it, or if you've done it in the past, we'd love to have you come back. The easiest way to sign up, go to the top of my Twitter page, Brian WGR. It's the pinned tweet. It's also the link in my bio. You can click on it. Even if you can't participate and you'd like to donate, you can do so there through the link. We'd love to have you be a part of it.
And it's great for the whole family, by the way.
Yes. Kids can do it. You can bring grandpa and grandma along too. You don't have to be a good putter, by the way, to do this, by the way. It's, obviously we're going to give away, we're going to crown somebody as Western New York's best putter at the end here, but we'd love to have you do it. It's super fun. We got music going the whole time. There's other sort of activities happening. So, and it's a great spot to just come and hang out. Even if you want to do it, or maybe your boyfriend or girlfriend want to do it and the other just wants to come and watch, it's a good hangout night at Glen Oak.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming over today. I appreciate it. We're going to be playing golf in a little while. Tell me, Josh, what's on tap? What's coming up next? Because I think we're in this space here this time of year where sometimes the things change. Sabres Live is up next. Okay, so I want to make sure. I don't want to promote them if they weren't going to be on, but they are. You got Sabres Live up next, and then One Bills Live as well today, I'm assuming, right? We'll have that as well. And then you're going to have a show with the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. So keep it right here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Got all your coverage all the way through. You're not going to hear from me until I get back from Italy, and then it's training camp. So hope everybody enjoys the next week and a half or so, and then I'll talk to you again.